Welcome to the Philippe Matthews Show at thepmshow.tv. Named the Oprah of the Internet by Mark Victor Hansen, Philippe Matthews doesn't ask questions that are different. He simply asks questions that make a difference. The Philippe Matthews Show features entertainers, bestsellers, authors, thought leaders, change agents, and world-class experts in the field of personal, spiritual, and professional development. An internet marketing entrepreneur, Philippe is the creator of the How Movement, dedicated to teaching people how to move from the mindset of hope to the process of how. If you are ready to take your life to the next level, move from the mindset of why to the mindset of why not. Tune in right now to this latest edition of the Philippe Matthews Show and watch your life grow.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Philippe Matthews Radio Show. Thank you for listening and tuning in wherever you are in the now around the world. We've got a huge player in the game of mindset and making it happen and reframing. The book is called Crunch Time, How to Be Your Best When It Matters Most. And Rick Peterson is with me today. He has coached some of baseball's best pitchers in the past 20 years, including Cy Young Award winners and Hall of Famers. He was the Oakland Athletics pitching coach during the famed Moneyball era and has served as a coach with the New York Mets, Chicago White Sox, yay, my hometown, Pittsburgh Pirates, and Milwaukee Brewers. He is currently director of pitching development with the Baltimore Orioles. He holds a combined degree in psychology and art, and he, along with Judd Hoekstra, are the authors of Crunch Time. Welcome, Rick.
How you doing?
I'm phenomenal, man. I'm almost as phenomenal as you, but you have had an incredible life, and this is an incredible book and work. And one of the pivotal pieces of this work is what you call reframing. And you have used this throughout your career, but you've also used it in your personal life as well. For those who are not familiar with the term or the application, can you give us a little background on that?
Yeah, what reframing is, literally, is looking at a situation in a very unique way, especially in crunch time when there's money on the table and you're really in a pressure situation. And we all deal with pressure, whether it's in your life, you know, your personal life, your career, your financial, you know, we all have our own personal pressures that we deal with on a daily life. And, you know, in the sports world, you know, it's just done, it's magnified. It's done in front of live audiences and, you know, sellout crowds. And so what reframing is literally taking a look at a situation and asking yourself, what is my opportunity here? As opposed to looking at it as a threat, a threatening situation. And literally there's a physical response to this, because when we're under pressure, what happens is your body actually releases this cortisol that goes through your system. Your mouth gets dry, your palms get sweaty, your muscles get tight, your mind gets really cloudy. You know, there's no rational thought going on. And on the other hand, when we're in that state of performing at our best under pressure, our body releases dopamine, which literally dilates the blood vessels. It allows oxygen and glucose to go through the system, allows us to think very clearly, and we're excited about the opportunity to perform at our best. So the people that have the skill set that are incredibly successful, you take a look at the Derek Jeters, you know, Hall of Famer, Mariano Rivera, some of the pitchers that I've coached, Tom Glavine and Pedro Martinez, these guys, when the pressure's on, you know, whether it's in postseason or during the season, they look at it as a tremendous opportunity to perform at their best and really, you know, really kind of ignite the crowd, you know, literally, and bring the crowd into that, and everybody gets excited about, you know, this kind of high-level performance.
Absolutely, and you know, what you're saying is so true. Most people look at sports, athletics, as a physical event, when really it is a mental event, that if they did not have the coaching, the mindset training, their bodies wouldn't be able to perform at the level that is needed under that level of pressure.
Well, no question about it. And you take a look at some of the top performers, like for example, you take a look at Tom Brady, arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I mean, he was, what was he drafted, sixth round? In his first spring camp or summer camp, he walks up to Robert Kraft and said, "This is the best decision you guys ever made." And what makes him one of the best quarterbacks in the game? He runs faster, he jumps higher, he has the best arm? No, it's his mind. And I think when people really understand that your mind is your master and your body is your servant, your body will follow where your mind is. And when you look at that, what was it, 28-3 with like 3 minutes left in the third quarter, and I've met many directors of, you know, the people who direct the broadcasts on television, you know, for sporting events. And, sure. And what do they show? They show your whole TV screen is filled up with Tom Brady's face. Why? because they want to give you the insight. What is he thinking and what is he feeling? Where is his emotions right now? And there is no question about it. During that crunch time moment, there was no panic on that face. This was an opportunity. And he even said it in his post game. We went into the locker room at halftime and we said, we have an unbelievable opportunity to have the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. They looked at it as an opportunity.
Wow. How about that? This is very powerful, you know, because, okay, I'm thinking of young athletes getting into the game. And this can also, ladies and gentlemen, of course, just be applied to, you know, the soccer mom, you know, with kids in sports. But looking at it as an opportunity as opposed to a threat, this is something that really can be used. I mean, we're speaking about, you know, top-level athletes, but this is something that can be used across the board in every aspect of your life.
In everybody's daily life. I actually did an hour-and-a-half presentation yesterday at Columbia University for one of their graduate classes. And literally, I mean, these people are, you know, on the cusp of going out in the world to make a difference in people's lives. You know, so again, you know, you look at, you know, a surgeon that goes into surgery. I mean, that's an opportunity. I mean, you look at Dr. Andrews, who, you know, I actually received the Dr. Andrews Lifetime Achievement Award a couple years ago. Mm. I mean, he's operating on some of the top athletes in the history of the game. And mm-hmm. If he goes in there and screws this operation up, this guy's career is done. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
But he looks at it as an opportunity to revive this, and he looks at it at a very high level because he looks at it like not only is he going to heal this person's, you know, hip, or he did Bo Jackson's hip, he did Roger Clemens' shoulder, I mean, on and on, all the elbows and shoulders he's done in professional baseball, but he looks at it not only as an opportunity to get this person back on the field, but an opportunity for this person to make a difference in the fans that follow this person. You know, this is also also interconnected. And I think if you get and what we've realized over the years, this is not something that you're born with. This is a skill set you can learn. And everybody can learn. And if we just take the moment when that fear, worry, and doubt starts to overcome us and push the pause button and say, wait a second, what's my opportunity? Because fear, worry, and doubt stands on four legs: a lack of preparation, a lack of insight, a lack of talent, and a lack of knowledge. So if you push the pause button and say, am I prepared for this? Do I have confidence in my talent level? Do I have the knowledge to perform this test or skill or presentation, whatever it is? And do I have the insight to make adjustments along the way? If the answer is yes to all those questions, fear, worry, and doubt is defeated. It's totally defeated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your opportunity.
Well, I really like this because, and I want to, you know, dig even deeper into this conversation of reframing and turning threats into opportunities. There's a quote in the book and in the bio that says, "Overcome our inner caveman and start using our conscious brain." Dig deeper with me on that.
So the caveman is the part of your brain, and I don't want to get over technical. We really wanted to make this in layman's terms, not a biology class. But in the base of your brain is your amygdala, and it's an automatic response. And the caveman, you know, back in the day, this is all about fight, flight, or freeze. And people leave out the freeze. And the caveman was very valuable back in the prehistoric days because that's what allowed you to survive. But our pressures in most cases in our daily lives, this is not about a threatening situation that our lives are threatened. It's more that our minds are threatened. And fear, worry, and doubt is an automatic response. When these events happen, you can't stop it. It's an automatic response. This is what your brain does. But then you have another part of your brain in your prefrontal cortex that's really your conscious thinker. So when you're able to, when the caveman starts to like take over your thoughts and you're saying like, geez, am I good enough to do this? I mean, what if I fail? My teammates are going to think I'm a big loser. What if I fail this test? What if I totally mess up on this whole sales presentation and I blow the sales cycle? You know, what if I do all these negative things and, you know, people will think I'm a loser. I'll be embarrassed. This is so, you know, self-defeating. The people that are winners, and it's always about developing a winning culture within yourself personally and within your own personal team, whether it's in sports or in business. And what is a winning attitude? And what if you don't have it? How do you get it? Well, what a winning attitude is, it's habits of thought and it's habits of action, routines. And people that are winners, they have productive habits of thought because they always ask themselves, what's my opportunity? Or when a problem comes up, they don't dwell on the problem. They look at the solution. I mean, so how many of us have been in the car and get a flat tire? I mean, how long are you going to sit in the car going, geez, are you kidding me? Can you believe we got a flat tire? This is awful. It's like, hey, we got a spare in the back. Let's get out and change the tire and let's move on. Let's get down the road. And that's your opportunity. And when you look at literally a lot of, if you look at your personal lives, go back in time and think about some of the most terrible things that happened to us. In most cases, if we turned out to be successful people, those moments shifted us in a whole other direction in a very positive way. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the worst thing in the end of the day that really happened to us. It was at that moment. But then it shifted us to go in a totally different direction so that we become successful and go down another path. And it's basically like in your GPS, hey, we're going to make a wrong turn once in a while. We're going to have a setback. We're going to make a mistake. But what literally is the opportunity for a setback? It's to prepare yourself for your comeback so that you can get back on the road and come back and be successful. And it's okay to make a mistake. We're all going to make them. And Steven Soderbergh, you know, who's a friend of mine, who actually the first stab at the movie Moneyball, I was a technical director with Steven Soderbergh. And one of the things that I learned from Steven Soderbergh, he said, in order to be really successful, you have to have intrinsically this error correction, because we know coming in that we're going to make mistakes, and it's okay to make mistakes. But the key is not to make the same ones over and over again, and learn from your mistake and move on and not beat yourself up. And one of the things I say to the pitchers that I've coached over the years, like when things aren't going well, and let's say, you know, you walk the leadoff hitter, you know, you make a bad pitch and you're out there, you know, going, God, I am like so stupid. I can't believe how stupid I am. I mean, what the hell's the matter with me? And you listen to all that inner dialogue. If that was actually put on a microphone and people could actually hear how you were talking to yourself, you'd be institutionalized. People mm-hmm. would think you're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So
and I say to our pitchers, what would you think of me as a coach if I walked up to you and started talking to you the way that you're talking to yourself? You think like what a jerk this guy is. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to be your own worst coach? The answer is no. It's not okay.
You know, this is amazing. Another thing that you guys talk about in this book is why trying easy is more effective than trying harder. Please unpack that. That's amazing.
Well, I think what happens is when we're under pressure, we've had this like kind of drilled in our mind as kids, hey, we got to give 110%. Well, 110% in your preparation, yes. But 110% in your performance, the answer is no. You have to learn how to get your foot off the gas pedal. And there's some really incredible stories. Sandy Koufax is probably one of the most compelling, where Sandy Koufax, for the first several years of his career, was not very good. He had a losing record. And he still had great stuff, great fastball, great curveball. But he was a losing pitcher. And in spring training, and this is Sandy in his own words, and I had the chance to meet Sandy and talk with him at length when I was a pitching coach with the Mets. He would come to spring training, and we'd spend some time together. But one of the things that he talked about was he was scheduled to pitch. This is actually a B game in spring training, meaning it's not the game on the main field that you go to in a spring training game where all the fans are there. This is on a backfield. And he was scheduled to pitch five innings. And the pitcher that was supposed to follow him to finish the last four innings of the game actually missed the flight. So Sandy said, listen, I can pitch a couple extra innings. I mean, it's no problem. And so his roommate and catcher, Norm Sherry, said, hey, Sandy, listen, at this point of spring, you don't want to really extend yourself and put yourself at risk of injury. So, look, you know, just get your foot off the gas pedal. You know, back off a little bit. Just pitch about 80-90%, and so you don't, like, really strain your arm. Well, the pitcher that finished that game turned out to be the Hall of Famer. That jump-started his career. He pitched a no-hitter that day and pitched a complete game. And he said, what I understood was if I can just try easy and take the grunt out, and I realize that I have the same fastball that I had when I put the grunt into this and try as hard as I can every pitch, but I have better location and I have better movement on my fastball. And he realized with just a little bit less effort, you know, I was able to perform at my best. The other great story is Katie Ledecky, who holds the world record for the 1,500-meter freestyle in women's. So in one of the trials, one of the preliminary heats to get to the finals, which she was going to, you know, get to the finals easily, but she had to go through two heats. So her coach said, listen, for the first 900 meters, you know, just go really just nice and easy. And the next 300 meters, you know, maybe just put a little bit more into it. And then the last 300 meters, you know, your choice, you know, do whatever you think, you know, however you feel. And she said, I was going so nice and easy because I didn't want to exert myself, you know, so I'd be ready for the finals. And then when I finished the race and I looked up, she broke her own world record. That was her world record, the best time she ever had. And she realized that, you know, just literally by backing off a little bit, I had better rhythm, you know, I had better technique, I was nice and loose, I had a nice flow to it, and it's really, and I say this to a lot of pitchers, because a lot of pitchers wear Nikes, and I say, and I ask them after a tough outing, and they said, God, I was just trying so hard. I said, you got Nikes on, right? They go, yeah. I said, what's that slogan? Just do it. I said, you need to change your shoes. But you need to change your shoes, man. You need to put the Just Try It's on.
Nice. You even used the analogy of Michael Jordan gave you some great revelations on how to prepare and prep time for a game.
Well, I was a young pitching coach with the White Sox back in the 90s, early 90s, and Michael Jordan was playing baseball at the time. He took that time off from the NBA. And I don't think all of us couldn't get enough of being around Michael Jordan. I mean, he's Michael Jordan.
Right. You know. Right.
I mean, to really see, like, what makes Michael Jordan so special? You know, obviously he's got great talent. And I had the opportunity as a young coach to ask Michael. I said, Michael, was there ever a moment in your life that you realized, holy geez, like, I'm MJ. I'm Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
He said, actually, there was. He said, after my sophomore year, Coach Smith always told me that, Michael, you're one of the greatest young talents of our generation. And he always talked to me about, like, how great my talent was and really tried to encourage me to understand, like, what a great career I could have. So after my sophomore year, he took practice videotape, and game footage, and he scrambled them of his freshman year and sophomore year. And he said, Michael, I want you to go through every clip, and I want you to tell me what year each one of this clip is from. So he went through the exercise, freshman, sophomore, sophomore, freshman, freshman, sophomore. And afterwards, he said, so what's your takeaway from this, Michael? And he said, you know what? He said, I realized that, you know, my freshman year, I had a great year. And I prepared great. He said, my sophomore year, I had a really, really good year. And I prepared really, really good. And I realized that talent does not equal performance, but preparation equals performance. And I realized with the great talent that everybody had told me that I have, that if I prepare great, then I have the opportunity to be one of the greatest players of all time. And that was so insightful to me, because the question is, can we all be as good as Michael Jordan? The answer is no. Can we all prepare like Michael Jordan? The answer is yes. One of the things that I say to all our pitchers, that will everybody here pitch in the big leagues and have a big league career? Probably not. You know, the odds are against us all. I mean, to be at that elite level is really, it's a privilege without question. But the prerequisite of being a great major league player is you have to be a great major league person. And that's having productive winning habits of thought and having routines that we prepare at a high level every day. And the price to be best is an incredibly high price. And unfortunate, and you have to pay full price. You can't go to Walmart. You can't go to Target. There's no coupons for it. It doesn't go on sale. You got to pay full price every day. And that's what being best is about.
Wow. I love that. You talk about shifting from pessimism to optimism in three steps. Share that with us, please.
Well, number one, you recognize that, okay, this is a pressure situation. Fear, worry, and doubt is starting to overcome me. My caveman is starting to take over. And then I ask myself, do I really want to think this way? And if the answer is yes, then continue on that path and let your caveman take over the situation. If the answer is no, then let's push the pause button. Let's ask ourselves, what is the opportunity? And let's start looking at some different possibilities of how we can react in this way. Because if we change our thoughts, once again, our mind is our master. If we change our thoughts, then we change our actions. And once we change our actions, then we change the outcome. And that's what it takes to be successful.
You also call reframing a powerful life hack. What do you mean by that?
Well, what we mean by that is that really what you're doing is you're hacking your caveman thought, your caveman consciousness. And what happens is your caveman takes over, and, you know, maybe not like what happened in the election with the Russians, but you want to hack that caveman thought. and you want to shift it to your conscious thinker. And once your conscious thinker takes over, you start looking at the realm of possibilities, you know, the realm of solutions, the realm of opportunities. And all the great people that I've been around, the great players, and, you know, when Michael Lewis is writing Moneyball, he traveled with us that year. And I sat next to Michael for 6 months on the team bus. And we had just unbelievable conversations. Because Moneyball reframed the baseball industry totally. And right after Moneyball came out, that's when teams started shifting to the Moneyball philosophy. Before that, the Oakland A's were really the only ones. And then about four or five teams started going on that path. But now all 30 teams are Moneyball teams. Everybody's using statistical probabilities and predictive analysis. So the difference maker now for teams is to shift into the mental part of the game and get into the literal mental makeup of the person so that you can generate great team chemistry and bring together a whole group of people that are greater than the sum of their individual parts. And that's the next generation. And when you take a look at, like, Google, for example, Google came out with an in-house program called Search Inside Yourself, mindfulness training. And it became so popular, they took it out and offered it to the public. And mindfulness training is starting to become, you know, really something that's incredibly, you know, day-to-day routine for people that is incredibly powerful. And actually it really started in our country when the Beatles went over to India with the Maharishi. And when they came back, you know, they took the transcendental meditation, and there was a big movement that went from that point on. But when you listen to, you know, what's going on inside Fortune 500 companies, there's a lot of, you know, and my business partner, who does a lot of corporate workshops and executive coaching, you know, she's been teaching mindfulness training for 15 years to superintendent. And that's where it's really going, because you have to have a practice. You have to have an individual practice. And there's many routines. I mean, you could take a walk, you know, walk through the park, or a walk on the beach, or, you know, a bike ride or a yoga class. I mean, there's many different ways, and there's so many different apps on your phone now. You know, like Headspace is a real popular one. But in order to train your mind, and that's listening to Steven Soderbergh, and, you know, that segment in the book where you know, we interview Steven Soderbergh, and he talks about, he said, look, doing these scenes in the movie, it's like standing behind an engine of a jet engine when it's ready to take off. And he said, I have to get my mind so peaceful, so calm, and so relaxed when we got on the set so that everything slowed down. And if things started going sideways, I literally would, like, get everybody off the set, focus on the solution, and then bring everybody back. Because if it started going sideways for any length of time, you couldn't get it back on track.
Mm-hmm.
It's too powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, this is absolutely amazing. You know, the mindfulness is really a good component, because I was going to ask you, it's like, what can we do on a daily basis to begin implementing this? Because most of this is situational, where we're, you know, dealing with something that is an event. But what you're saying is that this is something we can practice on a daily basis, so that when those events come up, we can and have the power to reframe and apply it effectively, because we've been doing mindfulness work on a daily basis.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Because it's a skill, once again. And it's a skill that you can, and what literally happens, the physiology of the brain, there's a lot of science and data out here. And it's one of my favorite quotes, "In God we trust, all others must have data." But there's a lot of data that indicates that the physiology of the brain, you create space literally in your mind from the distance from the caveman, you know, to the conscious thinker. And that's having the skill set to push the pause button and just stop. Just push the pause button for a second. Because what happens is you get short of breath. Like I said, you know, the cortisol starts going through your system. You get short of breath. You know, your mind starts to race. You know, you hear people in sports say, "Geez, like the game sped up on me." The game's going the same speed. Your mind is speeding up on you is what's happening. And you have to be able to recognize this and literally, like I said, stop, push the pause button, take a deep breath, and say, "Wait a second. Do I want to keep thinking these thoughts, or do I want to start thinking about opportunities?" Because once you start thinking about opportunities, you go down the realm of new possibilities, and you look at the situation totally different.
Absolutely amazing. You even talk about how Martin Luther King Jr. used reframing to galvanize the civil rights movement.
I mean, think about that, really. I mean, I was old enough to remember that. I watched that live in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
I mean, I was very young. I was maybe 7 years old, whatever. But I do vividly remember that. And I wrote later on in high school, I wrote a major paper on Martin Luther King, because I was just so, you know, well, my dad managed in the minor leagues through the 60s in the South. So as a young boy, I saw the civil rights movement. I mean, I sold popcorn and peanuts in Kinston, North Carolina. I was 7 years old at the ballpark, and the first base bleachers was only for African Americans. Because I grew up in New Jersey, and because of baseball, you know, baseball had, you know, Jackie Robinson had already been in. You know, the Pirates had more African or more Latin American players than any team in all of baseball. You know, so they were very diverse at that time. And so as a young boy, I didn't know any better. So I'm selling popcorn and peanuts, and I go underneath the chain to go into the first base bleachers, and the usher said, he goes, "Rick, that's only for blacks." I said, "Well, everybody likes popcorn and peanuts, right?" I mean, I didn't know any different. But when you think about how stressful, and, you know, in the country, I mean, it was like, you know, the stress of the civil rights movement, and now Martin Luther King brings all these people to Washington, D.C. at the Washington Monument, and people were, I remember literally, I mean, all the security was there. I mean, they didn't know if this was going to be turned into an all-out riot, and he starts off, "I have a dream. I have a dream and his dream was about bringing people together, you know, people working together, living together, you know, going to school together, you know, the whole deal. And it was like he reframed, he totally reframed the whole civil rights movement.
That is amazing. Thank you for sharing that. That is absolutely amazing. The book, ladies and gentlemen, is Crunch Time, How to Be Your Best When It Matters Most. Rick Peterson is also co-author with Jude Hoekstra. And this is an amazing book for anyone who wants to elevate their game, elevate their mind, peak performance. You can't get much better than Rick Peterson at peak performance. But to elevate whatever aspect of your life that is, whether that's on your job, whether that is you as an entrepreneur, or if you're in sports and athletics, it will work there as well. It will even work, I would actually go as far as saying it would work in relationships. It will improve your relationships, both intimate relationships and social relationships. Do you agree?
Without question. In fact, and now if you could look at rickpetersoncoaching.com, that's our website, because I'm now really going into a new chapter in my life of doing a lot of keynote speaking, corporate workshops, and it was interesting. We did a keynote and a workshop for a small company the other day, and it was interesting. Right afterwards, the CEO of the company called and he said, "You know what?" He goes, "I started using Reframe." He goes, "Thanks so much for, you know, this is so insightful." And he said, "We're all, you know, the whole buzz around the office now is we're all talking about, you know, what's our opportunity and how do we reframe?" And he said, "You know, I was going through this situation with my wife last night," and he said, he goes, "Honey, what, you know, what's our opportunity here?"
Completely threw it off.
Yeah, and they both looked at each other and literally laughed like you did, because when you can bring humor to a situation, you know, then you start to release the dopamine throughout your system and you start to become more relaxed, and they started, you know, they laughed and they said, "Yeah, you know, we do have opportunities here. How grateful are we that we have this, you know, incredible relationship?" Because, you know, you just get into these awful habits and then you just react. You automatically react the same way. And then you pull yourself away from it and go like, what am I doing? What's my opportunity here?
Wow.
And yeah, it's really, yeah. And you know what? I'm going to say that backwards. Wow.
I like that. That is amazing. That is really amazing. So rickpetersoncoaching.com is where you can go and connect with Rick. Of course, the book is available on Amazon. Any other things that we need to know about socially, your Facebooks or Twitters? How can people get engulfed with the Rick Peterson philosophy?
Well, my Twitter is Rick Peterson CT, Crunch Time. And of course, you know, you can find me on Facebook, and you know, it's really been, you know, after coaching for so many years and, you know, 15 years in the big leagues, I've had an incredible privilege for what I've been able to do. And I look at, and so now it's like, I feel like it's time for me to, you know, to coach at a different level and then really share this with people outside of our industry. Uh-huh. What I've realized over the years is that the people that are best when you watch in sports, and it was really fascinating as well. Last thing I'll share with you, I'm watching the couple days before the Masters a week ago. Uh-huh. And they were interviewing, you know, they had the press conferences for all the players. And I just so happened to have it on when Jordan Spieth was on. And they said, "Jordan, you know, we've asked this question a zillion times. Last year at the 12th hole, you know, he had a 2-shot lead going into the 12th hole on Sunday afternoon. And he got too aggressive with his target and put the first shot in the water, and then did the same thing again on the second shot and got really aggressive with it, and it rolled back into the water again." And they asked him, they said, "What were you thinking as you were walking to the 13th tee after that awful, you know, mistakes on the 12th hole?" And he said, you went in to the 12th hole with a 2-shot lead, and you're walking to the 13th green down by a stroke. He said, "What were you thinking at that time?" He said, "Now I have the opportunity to win the Masters by coming from behind."
Wow, that is a reframe. That is a powerful reframe. Wow.
Isn't that amazing? And
that
I think
he's amazing. Because you know, it reminds me of that old quote: "Failure is not an option." So you don't even entertain the possibility of failure or losing. You completely reframe it as an opportunity in some way.
Yeah, exactly. And when you have the skill set to do, again, it's a skill. That's not something that's in your DNA.
Sure.
I mean, some people have it in their DNA. I mean, I think we all get that. You know, Muhammad Ali probably had that in his DNA. But it's a skill. If you don't have it, it's a skill that you can learn. And
wow.
We all can learn it. Because I've had many pitchers, and I think, you know, from, you know, just the confidentiality, I'm not going to mention names. But
sure.
I've had many pitchers that had great big league careers that did not have this early on in their career. They struggled with it. And I realized, because my degree is in my educational background is in performance related behavior, sports psychology with a combination of art. And I realized, I was so intrigued. And the reason why I studied that in school is because, you know, here I was drafted out of high school by the Orioles and in junior college, we were pre-ranked number one in the nation. We finished second in the nation. And then at Jacksonville University, we were as high as fourth in the nation. And I got to tell you, the stress of going to pitch, you know, like against Florida State when they're ranked number one, I mean, I was an emotional wreck before the game. I mean, once the game started, I was fine. But before the game started, you know, I really struggled. I mean, and it's, you know, I say this to pitchers all the time. It's good to have butterflies, but they got to fly in formation. And they,
I love that.
And so I took a transcendental meditation class, you know, when I was 21 years old, because I wanted to learn how to control my mind more effectively. How great is this? I mean, what you're trying to learn, you know, to apply right now, I'm in school and I could take classes and learn it and study it. And, you know, and then as I got into coaching, I realized that, you know, yeah, I mean, I coach, you know, I studied biomechanics with at ASMI with Dr. Andrews. I mean, adjusting deliveries, that's like moving furniture around the room. But coaching the mind is a whole nother level. And the more that you have the skill set to understand where the mind is of the person that you're coaching. Because in order to be a great teacher, you have to be a great student. And you become a great student of the people that you're coaching. And then once you learn what that person's mind is about, you know, then you can go, you can speak their language and really help take their mind down the path of reframing and looking for solutions and opportunities.
You know, a connection I just made from listening to you talk about mindfulness, talk about reframing, and many of the people who you mentioned throughout the program, this mindfulness training and reframing work that you're doing, that you talk about in the book, I would assert would help people with addictions or perhaps keep them away from it, because usually it's when you're under a lot of pressure, you're looking for a way to escape or to numb. This
right.
work takes all of that away. So like when you were talking about the Tom Brady's and all these are very even keel people, not just on the field, but in their life. They're pretty much the same, and there's not a lot of chaos surrounding them or addictions and crazy behavior. Would you agree with that?
Without question, there's no question about it. You know, I mean, because they're so driven. You know, but again, I'm going to say this: those are small percentages of people that are just have this burning desire to be best. Not everybody is willing to pay that price to be best. I mean, I've had a lot of pitchers that had talent that had nice careers, but they could have had great careers, and they just weren't willing to pay the price. And as much as you would approach them with this and make them aware of it, you know, I mean, I used to like say like, you know, yeah, I would say to them, you know, you're bouncing checks. I said, they go, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, you're going to the Mercedes deal. You think you could buy a Mercedes for $5,000. You don't have enough in your account for that. That's not what best is. That's not what best. You're not investing in yourself. And so you use all these analogies to help people because you hope that one of these analogies are going to really trigger to somebody. You know, so when you look at making an investment in yourself, you know, one of the other analogies that I use, I've had pitchers actually do this. I give them an assignment that day. So I say to them, I said, listen, today at the end of this day, if your routines are best, I'll give you a penny. Let's say this is the first day of the month. I'll give you a penny today. Tomorrow your best, that penny will double. Now it's 2 pennies. The third day, it's 4. The fourth day, it's 8. The fifth day, it's 16. The sixth day, it's 22. And at the end of the week, it's worth 64 cents. I'll keep doubling that for 31 days of this month. Or I can just write you a check for it right now. I'll write you a check for $1 million. Which one would you take?
Wow.
Go run those numbers. It's over $5 million when
wow.
that keeps doubling. Now day 31, it turns into, I think it's a little over $5 million. And that's compounded interest. I mean, so that when you can invest in yourself, that's what you're doing as far as your own personal development. And I would challenge people to say, look, if you could spend a minimum of 10 minutes, if you can go to 20, that's best. But if you spend 20 minutes of literally just quieting your mind and go through some type of mindfulness practice, and do that for 30 days, you'll never go back. You'll never go back to anything that you've done before because your mind will be in such an incredible place that you'll start to see things so differently in every aspect of your life, your career, your family, your personal life. You'll start seeing it so differently, and you'll start literally asking yourself, what are the realm of possibilities? And then you start to realize you start to make a difference in other people's lives in a very powerful way. And that's when you really start going into a whole other direction.
Unbelievable. Absolutely incredible. Thank you for that, Rick. This is major. Rick Peterson, ladies and gentlemen, the book is Crunch Time, How to Be Your Best When It Matters the Most. Stop what you're doing and just download it right now. If it's a Kindle or just order it on Amazon immediately. This is a book. It's a must-read. You should have it in your library, and you should also make it a family event. Share it with the family. Share it with your kids, and just read a chapter a day if you could, just to go through it and make it a part of your life so it becomes a part. It becomes a behavior. This book, everything in it should become a behavior. It's absolutely amazing. Rick, thank you, and I want you to come back on the show if you would because I absolutely love talking to you.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure. Thank you
so
much.
Absolutely. RickPetersonCoaching.com, ladies and gentlemen. This has been Rick Peterson, famed coach, world-renowned coach and mindset peak performance trainer and leader. Philippe Matthews Show, radio show. Thanks for tuning in wherever you are. We'll see you guys next time. Take care, everybody.